Okay, thank you very much for the possibility to give a seminar here. I will tell you about something about a model which is we would like to give a quantum-like description of the planetary system. The idea is to the starting point of these. This description is the idea of Toft, the point of view of Toft about quantum mechanics, which is seen as a classical deterministic theory, possibly at the Planck scale, plus a dissipation mechanism, which should be identified with the information loss, and these two things together should bring to a quantum behavior at larger scale, or a quantum-like behavior. So,
determinism, the Hamiltonian, is linear in the momentum.
Well, the idea of Toft was okay.
There's several different Toft ideas, right?
I know. Okay, he started with the linear Hamiltonian. Then I think one of the last paper he was trying to develop more the model. Actually, the thing that I got from this general picture is the idea of chaotic dissipation, so something like that. So in fact, inspired by this use of the dissipation to obtain the idea of dissipation to obtain the apparent quantization of the orbit, I would like to see how far we can go with a description in a quantum-like language of the Titius Bode law for planetary distances. This law is a very quite old one. Is an empirical rule which was discovered in the 18th century, and this rule gives the distances from the Sun as a function of just a single number. The eldest version of this rule is this formula here. This is the distance of the planet from the Sun given in astronomical unit. And if you put here n equal to minus infinity, you get the distance of Mercury. Then for n equal to zero, the distance of Venus, and so on. And the original formulation of in this original formulation, the law was able to indicate the asteroid belt. Effectively, the asteroid belt Cerere, the first asteroid, was discovered in 1801. By Piazzi, just using this law, because the law was predicting a place, a planet between Mars and Jupiter, and so they started to look for this planet, and they discovered the first big asteroid, and then all the belt. An interesting thing of this law is that this formula matches the Uranus distance, and Uranus was not yet discovered when the law was formulated. It was discovered in 1781. But in this form, the law doesn't match the distance of Neptune and Pluto.
What's the value of n for
Uranus? Well, you have to go N equal 3 is Cerere for Jupiter, so I think 6, yeah, should be 6.
What is meant by match here? I mean, you're talking about empirical measurements.
The accuracy is around a few percent, say 5%, something like that.
For all of them
in this form, for all of them until Uranus. Then there will in the hypothesis, of course, of circular orbits, and so yes. It's just this is the hypothesis. There are a more modern version of the law, and which have been formulated in the 20th century, and the modern version of the law is this one, essentially, is like a constant, the time an exponential of this object, and it's an integer which runs over the positive integer. 2 lambda is a numerical constant. A is the can get this value for the solar system, and the interesting thing of this formulation, due to Black and Richardson and also Weizsäcker and several other people have worked on this stuff, the interesting thing is that this law is in this form can be applied to the whole solar system, including Neptune and Pluto, and not only to the solar system, but also to the other planetary system that we know, essentially, which means the satellites of Jupiter, the satellite of Saturn, and the satellite of Uranus. This law is gives the distances of these satellites from the central body, essentially, almost with in every system with roughly the same constant. This constant change a little bit, but not very much, from one system to another, from the solar system to Jupiter system or Uranus system and so on. And of course, you have also you have to choose different different parameter A in respect to the planetary system that you are considering. Essentially, A is the radius of the first orbit, the orbit of the inner satellite. So the idea was quite how can I say, simple, in the sense that when you see something like that, you would like to build some sort of description. The idea is to use a Schrödinger-like equation, some kind of wave equation, to describe the Titius-Bode law. And
can you tell us something very neat? So before you go to Schrödinger equation, why don't you ask why this law is true from the point of view of classical mechanics?
Ah, yes. No, okay. There are a lot of models that are trying to explain the law from the point of view of classical mechanics. Of course, I'm not saying that the quantum-like explanation is the only one or something like that. Actually, the one of the more developed model is the one created by Weizsäcker, von Weizsäcker, and to be precise, no one of these models is completely accepted by the community of astronomers and planetary scientist.
But I'm trying to say, so is it some property of an unstable system that if you start with, for example, the Sun and two planets, which, you know, two planets are very close to each other, so they're not going to satisfy this lot. If you wait long enough, you know, the outer planet will move out and, you know, do this exponentially from the distance, so something like that. You just demonstrated basically that you can match the orbits of, say, nine planets with two parameters.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a surprise from if you think that, you know, the orbits of the planets are just pure initial conditions of, you know, how these planets were formed.
Actually, okay, there are some kind of explanations in of this kind, I mean, starting from three-body problems and so on. But what I wanted to do, I mean, not only me, there are also other studies in this direction, is to try to give a description of this situation using a wave equation, using an eigenvalue problem, essentially, like the Schrödinger equation for the hydrogen atom. This was the idea of the of this model, underlying this model.
But is there going to be a connection between the wave function and something in classical mechanics? Or we're just going completely different? We're just looking for some equation which has the right eigenvalue?
I'm at this level. I'm just looking. I'm just trying to build an equation which gives back the more or less the right distances and the right expression of the law.
Isn't that always valuable? I mean, because it's something like the inverse scattering problem for bound states. You can specify it for bound states, and you can always find some potential that reproduces them. Bound states in the Schrödinger equation, I believe. So, no matter what they are. Of course, maybe it's a particularly natural potential. No, maybe I'm getting ahead of it.
I was using only the Newtonian potential to try to give that's in fact a problem, in the sense that if you use as you should, because the Newtonian potential, you, as I will show in a moment, you have to use a quantization condition which is not the Bohr like quantization condition, because if not, this gives to you the radius which goes like n squared, and we would like to have a radius which goes like an exponential. So, in fact, the idea was to give a quantization via the angular momentum, quantization rule on the angular momentum. So the first step is to build a model a la Bohr of the planetary system, and then to write a wave equation from this model. And okay, the Bohr model of hydrogen atom is just essentially the law of force, and then the Bohr quantization condition, which gives you the radius, which goes like n squared, and the energy levels of the hydrogen atom. Here, you have to change a bit if you want to get something like the Titius-Bode law. Here you have the force law, and okay, you have the force law and this quantization condition on the angular momentum, on the angular momentum per unit mass, and if you put this condition, immediately you get that the radius goes like this, which is the Titius-Bode law if you identify this parameter with A, and then you have a quantization of the energy level per unit mass, which goes in this way. Some comment are needed now on these law. And the comment are the following. The constant that I putted here, the S constant, this one, is clearly plays in some sense the role of H bar. S is an action per unit mass. But S is a typical number of the planetary system under consideration, which means that it is not the same for all the planetary system. S change in respect to the planetary system you are considering. So it is not universal like H bar. The lambda. The lambda in the formula is the phenomenological parameter given by the observation. And the quantized quantities are the angular momentum and the energy per unit mass. And we have to do this essentially because of the principle of equivalence, because the masses cancel here in the force formula, and if not, one would get a description with the mass here at the denominator, which and the mass usually change from planet to planet. It's not like the electrons that you have always the same mass and the same charge for every electron.
Aren't you assuming that the angular momentum of each planet is constant, whereas the planets are perturbing one another, so the individual angular momentum can't be quantized, in some sense, because the system isn't integrable. That was the problem with the old quantum theory, in
general. And it's important because that's how Neptune was discovered, by the perturbations on the orbit of Uranus. Yes. I mean, if you assume these quantization rule, you are able to get back the Titius Bode rule, and
but J is changing with time. So would you predict that S changes with time slowly?
No, in this sense, no. I'm not describing also the change of J with time. No. I'm supposing that J doesn't change with time for this description at this level. You are supposing that the orbits are circular. A lot of things that are essentially the hypothesis at the basis of the Titius Bode law, which assume circular orbits, and I know that is not the case, but you can say, okay, it's almost the case for essentially Titius Bode law is valid for it's good law for describing quite massive object. For example, it doesn't describe at all comets, for example. Doesn't describe at all strange asteroids or
objects in the Kuiper Belt, planet Sedna. I think it doesn't work for that either. Well, we've got other planets now.
Beyond Pluto, maybe okay. That could have maybe a description with this law, but in some sense. You need to have a planet, quite massive object, not light objects. Now we can try to write down a wave equation for the Titius Bode, we can introduce a scalar field which is the wave function of the planetary system, and it contains information about the whole planetary system, not on the behavior of the single planet. And comparing the quantization condition of Bohr and the rule, the Titius-Bode rule, we can write down a wave equation from the wave equation for stationary states of Schrödinger, and we can use this this equation to obtain back some information on the radius of the orbits, some description of the radius of the orbits, and on the energy levels of the system. Here you have also the potential per unit mass, energy potential energy per unit mass, and the energy per unit mass also. Another important observation to build this model is that all the planetary orbits lie in the same plane. Not simply the fact that an orbit is a planetary orbit lie in a plane. Okay, this is just the second Kepler law, but all the different orbits are more or less in the same plane. And so we can write down a wave equation, say Schrödinger, but maybe it's better to say wave equation, in two dimension, and we can write down the Hamiltonian per unit mass in this way. And usually, when you make the ordinary quantum mechanics, you make the association with the radial part of the momentum given by this operator, and the angular part of the momentum given by this operator. Of course, here we have to try something else, because if not, the angular part of the momentum operator act okay on this eigenfunction belonging to this Hilbert space. But the problem is that it has these bad eigenvalues, that we don't want to have these eigenvalues like this. We would like to have eigenvalues like this one. So we can define a new operator in this way, acting on the eigenfunctions on the basis of this Hilbert space, and putting here the lambda, which is the phenomenological parameter that I told you before. And P phi can be defined to be linear, and is well defined on this Hilbert space. And the explicit form on P phi is just the exponential, essentially is the exponential of the derivative operator delta phi. When you have done this, you get that you get this new association. You have the angular part of the momentum operator, which is associated to this object here, and so that the action of this operator on the eigenfunctions is given by this expression, and the operator so defined is Hermitian, self-adjoint, and so the Hamiltonian per unit mass now can be written in this way. And now, using this Hamiltonian, you write the wave equation in this way, and now you can use the usual solution procedure to find. To find if this wave equation gives you back the results already given by the phenomenological Titius-Bode rule, and maybe something more than that. In fact, we will see that we can get back some more information from this. Okay, you can use the separation of variables to solve this equation. This is the normalization condition, and the two separated equation, the radial equation and the angular equation, is this. And here you have essentially just the standard procedure for the solution of the radial equation. You seek for a radial function which goes like a power close to zero, and this gives to you this value of the parameter t. And if we use some natural unit of mass, length, and energy, the radial equation can be written in this way, and so we can look for the discrete spectrum for the bound orbits, defining this variable n and rho. Rho is just proportional to the radius r, and using this substitution in the radial equation, what we get is essentially a confluent hypergeometric equation, and the solution is the confluent hypergeometric function with these indexes here, and the function is a good function only if this object is the solution is a polynomial solution only if this number is a negative integer, and so this gives to you some condition on the index n, which means on the energy. Still, we have to find what is t2, which is the square root of m. So we have to solve the angular equation to get the spectrum of A. The angular equation can be solved, is very easy, is already an eigenvalue equation, so very easy to find eigenvectors and eigenvalues. And so you find mu in this way, and you arrive to have the spectrum of energy, which in ordinary units reads like this, with n given running on the non-negative integers and m running over all integers. Now some comments are needed. For n fixed, big N, large N, capital N fixed, and for large m number, you get the energy levels which coincides with the formula given by the model Alabor, essentially the Titius-Bode formula. The interesting thing is that this can be called, in this formula, can be called the principal sequence. Here, if you put n equal to zero, you have this expression. Is the closest one to the Titius-Bode phenomenological formula, and m takes the positive integers values. Now, nevertheless, you can put in this formula also other integer values. In particular, you can look for resonances, or even for rings, in the sense that you can look for a system where n is equal to zero and m takes the value, the negative integer values. Let's see what kind of description or prediction, if you wish, can we obtain from this formula. We can compute the mean value of the variable R for the eigenstates of the principal sequence. And here you have you have the normalization constant of this object, and then the normalization condition. We are computing some eigenstate the states of the principal sequence are given by n equal to zero. So confluent hypergeometric function is just equal to one, so it's quite easy to compute this expression to get the normalization constant, and so in the end we get this mean value of the mean value of R of the distance R on the principal sequence, which is given by this expression here, and. Now we can see that the first thing is that writing the formula, the previous formula that I written here, this one, in natural in ordinary units and for m large, you get back the phenomenological Titius-Bode law.
I'm so sorry, but it seems to me that some of the Titius-Bode law hold equally well for the eight planets as well, and the Mercury and Venus. So what is the logic of being able to recover the Titius-Bode model with more gem? The model really recovers the Titius-Bode law for large m.
Yeah, it recovers only for large n, for large n.
Yes, but in fact, if you want to really recover it, you have to allow m to be unity, right? Because it more or less works as an expression for all the planets.
Okay, I agree with you. The model that up to now, I was able just to recover it for large n. But the interesting thing, maybe some can, is that now in this expression you can use also negative integers, and this means that you can look for a limit when m goes to minus infinite, and you have a sequence of permitted circular orbits which accumulate on this number, which is the half of the inner radius of the last satellite, and this can be done because if you use the Titius-Bode formula. Simply, you have push m to minus infinity, you simply get zero here. While on this expression, because of the presence of this one half here, you get an expression like this, a finite number. And if you now go to compare the radius of the inner ring of Saturn, Uranus, and Jupiter, you find that effectively are more or less given by this expression. And here there are some calculation for Saturn or for Uranus, and also for Jupiter, has been done also for Jupiter. The conclusions of this kind of calculation maybe are that a wave equation opportunely modified seems to give some description also for planetary systems and not only for atomic systems. And that's all.
Was there anything else on that list of possible conclusions?
There was something saying, it's just a comment, not a conclusion, this one, that probably we can say that you can imagine that a dissipation chaotic mechanism like the one devised by Toft for the quantization of atomic system has been at work during the history of solar system, and so that from the protoplanetary nebula where all the orbits were filled, after 5 billion years we arrived to the quantized orbits of today. So in some sense it's just okay, just a comment, this one, not
So is the idea that you start with some, like, the top starts with some distributive system, and then
probably
winds up with the wave equation.
The idea is perhaps that the dissipation mechanisms are, if Toft is right, are able to give an explanation of the quantization of the orbits in the atom, maybe also on the sort of quantization of the orbit in the planetary systems. Can be given perhaps a sort of unified description of this of these two different stuff, two different sector of the physics.
I'm just curious about what he was actually able to show.
Sorry?
I'm just curious about what Toft was actually able to show.
Actually, at the moment, I think he's doing models of harmonic oscillators, and still I don't think, I don't know if he's arrived already to give a description of hydrogen atom or not, but of course, I mean, a model like this is not doesn't mean that you have quantum mechanics in the solar system. This is not the quantum mechanics. You don't have commutators, or it's just a description or a tentative of description of these quantization rule, this phenomenological rule, which is the Titius-Bode law.
I'm just trying to understand the perspective. Is the perspective that you start with some dynamical system, and then at large times
maybe at large time you can give a description using a wave equation. Yes, maybe can be some sort of mechanism, analog mechanism between analogies between the mechanism in at work in the atoms for the quantization condition, and at works in the planetary systems.
But it seems to me the discussion that suggests only the existence of a possible analogy, not at all its details. So in principle, you could say, well, why not think of some quantum-like description, not so much even to explain where the radius of the planet sit, but how the mass distribution exists. You know, it's very interesting that we have in our solar system Jupiter where it sits, and it's so far away. Is that natural in any sort of way? Can we get any scheme in which we can understand that and see whether our solar system is really exceptional or more typical? And so that, it seems to me, would be a more interesting realization of some of these ideas, to ask if the mass can determine how the mass is distributed, not just precisely what the radii of the planets are.
You mean to look for some rule for the distribution of mass of planets? Yes, I mean there are studies on this
Oh, I'm sure there are many more conventional.
I just wanted in your description that you can imagine such an extension. Well, I have just done the work for the radius, not for the mass, okay.
Any more questions? Okay, we'll focus.